Welcome back, everybody, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. That's CarlsonCast.com. First up, it's your host. He's a sexy, sassy guy. He likes to take long walks on the beach. It's Vinny Paulino, everybody.
I don't like walks.
Yeah, I didn't buy the walk.
He'll go for a long bike ride with you as long as it's sitting down. Everybody, that's Brian Ball right there. Homo. He ain't got no hair. It's Cam Tiller, everybody. And our guests, not from the Bible, it's Moses Storm.
You're right, not from the Bible, but we are going to find out he knows quite a bit about it. We got some interesting things we're going to talk about on today's episode. Our guest, Moses Storm.
He's biblically funny.
He's
that would have been a better joke if I hadn't stumbled on my word.
Well, just stumble over mine while I'm trying to do the intro, too. That'd be good. He's a great comic. He's been in pretty much everything you could think of in the last few years, and he is going to be our guest in the studio. Four more shows this weekend at Comedy at the Carlson. Also, we're going to bring in a special guest in just a minute. But before we do that, I want to thank all of our new subscribers for checking us out and deciding to hit that neat little subscribe button. We really, really appreciate you. You are the reason we do this. Okay, I'm lying. We do it for the money.
We do?
I do.
Oh.
I do it for the money. Yeah, absolutely for the money. Speaking of for the money, let's talk about our great sponsors, shall we?
Yes, let's do that.
Coming up, there it is. Sapori Cafe and Catering, one of our favorite places in the world to have lunch. Located inside the Powers Building atrium, they could cater your special event. And I believe Chef Joe is working on a wonderful way where you could have Sapori right in your home whenever you want it. But I can't officially announce it yet. But I'm just going to say, it's going to be delicious.
Yeah, I will be definitely in line to purchase it.
Okay, no one cares about you. Three Heads Brewing, baby. Three Heads Brewing, the best beer you're going to find in Rochester. Sorry, Genesee, but Three Heads is, I'll tell you.
I don't think even Genesee calls themselves the best beer in Rochester.
True.
They just call themselves a beer in Rochester.
The only beer made with 100% Genesee River water.
Yeah.
Three Heads Brewing, right now the Tropical Kind is hitting shelves. You might want to give that a shot. It is delish. And last but not least, let's talk about Iron Smoke Whiskey, available in two fine varieties, Applewood Smoked Whiskey or Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey, available wherever fine liquor is sold. Put it in your mouth hole, but drink it responsibly. Yeah.
Which means alone with your cats.
Sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of alone with his cats, I'd like to welcome into the studio our very special guest and the host of the first Rochester Riff Night here at Comedy at the Carlson. It's Brian McBride. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
You want to help him fix that?
Yeah, there we go. Do I get a sample of that whiskey? Do I get like a parting gift?
It looks like you already did.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, it looks like you already did. Way to get dolled up this morning, McBride. You look good.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. We haven't done a project together in a very, very long time.
It's too long.
Well, we're changing that.
Yeah.
Because the Rochester Riff Night, would you like to describe it to the audience?
Absolutely, Vinny, I would. Thank you for asking. Rochester Riff Night, we take movies that, you know, from days gone past that, you know, desperately need to be made fun of, and I bring in the funniest comics from the Rochester area, and we make fun of the movie for all of your enjoyment.
That is correct. Now, when you're putting on a show like this, one of the things that we did was we put a poll on the Facebook page, Comedy the Carlson Facebook page, and we asked people to pick from a list of, I think it was about 5 to 10 movies.
There was and boy, was that almost a mistake.
Boy, was it. You know, when I put the poll up, because I was the one who did it, I screwed up and I left it open, so people were just putting movies in. Like, they were just adding what they wanted. And
that's how that happened?
That is how that happened. But let's, why don't you hit the Riff Night thing, and we'll tell everybody, we'll announce what we're doing here. Coming up at Comedy at the Carlson on March 1st.
As you requested.
Mm-hmm. Is going to be the Rochester Riff Night, but boy, is this promo long. Rochester Riff Night, we're going to be watching Mars Attacks.
Yeah. You haven't seen it, it's an awesome movie.
It's like, not an awesome movie, it's a terrible movie.
You're right, kind of bad.
It's pretty bad.
It's awesomely bad.
It's awesomely bad, and we're going to have fun riffing it. So, I guess, how did you pick the comedians that are going to be performing on it?
It was very scientific. I studied a lot of film. I gauged audience reaction, took polls. Basically, I hired a scientist.
It was just the first three guys that said yes, right?
Yeah, it was.
So it was Malcolm, me, and Brian.
Yeah.
Either way, we're going to be very, very funny. And for the price of less than a movie ticket, you come in and there's a full booze service. Booze service is what I'm calling it. Table service.
There you go.
Booze service.
Yeah, I mean, they're just serving us. There's actually food and all sorts of good things that you can get. But we're going to be watching the movie in the Rickles room on a giant screen. We're going to be talking over it with very, very funny jokes. And to be honest with you folks, like, we're putting in a lot of effort to write for
this. We are preparing
so hard.
Yeah.
Like, we're giving up nights of the week to write jokes about Mars Attacks. So.
And we have to watch Mars Attacks several times. So we're sacrificing for you.
I'm thinking that maybe for some of you who watch Mars Attacks with us, it will be the first time. It'll be the last time any of us watch it.
Yeah, for sure.
So either way, you can come out and be a part of it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tickets are going to be $10. They're going to be up on the CarlsonComedy.com probably today, hopefully today. Todd, if you're listening, baby, help me out. Get that up there today so people can start getting their tickets. But March 1st, McBride.
Get them quick.
Yeah, I know. I know. So when we came up with this idea to do it, what got you the most excited?
I just love the idea of just, like, talking over things. I watch movies with my friends and things, and we're always making jokes about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, some of these are pretty good. Let's try to do this and see what happens. And I just think it's going to be an awesome night.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I like watching movies with you guys.
Yeah. Aww.
It's very nice.
Aw, that's what I get?
Yeah.
You're not even like a nice, oh, that's nice of you, Vinny.
No, that's nice of you, Vinny.
Kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, Riff Night, March 1st, baby. We'll see
Come
you
out.
There. And we are going to be back in just a minute with our guest today, Moses Storm. So stick around. Hey everybody, we got some big shows coming up at Comedy at the Carlson. I wouldn't lie to you about a thing like that. In fact, just this week, Thursday night, we had Kay Vaughn in the Rickles room. The rest of this weekend, we have Moses Storm here through February 3rd. Jesse May Peluso will be here February 7th through the 9th. Todd Youngman will be in the Rickles room February 8th and 9th. Joel Lindley's Valentine's Day Dirty Heart Show will be February 14th in the Rickles room. Orny Adams will be here two nights only, February 15th and the 16th. Tickets are just about sold out, folks, so get them quick for Bob Saget, February 21st to the 23rd. Joselito de Puppet, February 27th at 7:30 p.m. Mateo Lane, February 28th through March 2nd. Dan Viola, March 2nd in the Rickles room. Dry Bar Comedy, March 7th through the 9th. Funny for everyone. Earl David Reed, March 14th through the 16th. The Slam Man, Jay Moore, March 21st through the 23rd. Dusty Slay, I'm excited for that one, March 28th through the 30th. Preacher Lawson, can't believe he's coming back, April 4th through the 6th. Tickets are flying. Samuel J. Comro, April 18th through the 20th. And last but not least, Little Jimmy Norton, May 17th through the 18th. So as you can see, I was not lying to you. We do have some amazing shows coming to Rochester, New York. For tickets and showtime information, visit CarlsonComedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. We'll see you at a show. Hey, everybody. We are back. In studio with us is our headliner this weekend, a man who's known as an actor. He's an artist. He's a comedian. An all-around hell of a guy. Welcome, Moses Storm, everybody.
Hey.
Give it up for Moses.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
You're welcome. Cool. I believe you are contractually obligated, so you are welcome.
Yes. They feed me or let me leave this town until I do this show.
Correct.
Yeah.
This is a very hostile. Just off screen, there's a man with I'm at dagger point.
Yeah.
The worst of the weapons, but you know, I could get a scratch or mild infection.
You know, when people tell you they got a dagger, you have to take it seriously. But part of you just goes,
really?
Yeah. Okay. It's gonna be like a wrestle. It's more like I don't want the effort of you trying to do something. It might be a little awkward if you try to stab me. So I'll do what you want, and that's why we're here.
Yeah.
All right. So do what we want. Let's talk.
Let's do it.
First off, before we go too far, I want to remind you, those of you who are watching right now, that the text line is open, so feel free to text your questions in, 585-484-0265. Moses, You grew up in Michigan?
Technically, yeah. We were in Michigan for a little bit, and then we traveled around a lot growing up.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to get to, because I also came up in a very, very religious household, and I know that your family were missionaries. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they were missionaries for a religion that they kind of made up. My dad was Jewish, my mom was pretty hardcore Catholic, and they made like a greatest hits of those two religions.
So you're telling me your parents gave it a go starting a cult?
Yes, but a very unsuccessful cult, like zero followers. We were the followers. They had to make followers.
I want to say, oh, that's too bad, but is it?
It's not too bad, but I do watch these like Netflix documentaries and even podcasts about cults, and I noticed myself getting jealous of these cults. I'm like, what are these like cool sex parties and
they look so happy.
Fun trips. We were just like unsuccessful open micers essentially of the cult world, just grinding it out, not getting any stage time.
I'm fascinated. Yeah,
where did you go to like recruit people?
We would go to like a Rolling Stones concert. We'd go to spring break down in Florida.
So all things that should be fun. So
all things where people are real open minded people, ready to hear whatever you have to say.
So you were just barking. You didn't have like kiosk in the mall or anything.
No, didn't have a kiosk at the mall. We had like large neon signs, and we'd be yelling things like "You're headed for hell," and we'd have like little propaganda pamphlets that we would pass out as kids, and we'd be yelling too. 2 years old, no idea what I'm saying out there, but you know.
You were 2 years old?
Yeah, when we started.
Wow.
Yeah, right? Which, isn't that adorable?
No, just imagine, like, no, a it's kid a problem.
In a white suit. A little faith healer.
Okay, so I have to ask this because, again, this show is more about comedy, but this is too fascinating not to talk about. What were the tenets of this type of religion? It was just a cross between Catholicism and Judaism?
Yeah, essentially, if like anything's like fun, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or and you have to feel guilty about everything.
Everything. Yeah. Yes, so that's the greatest hits of the two religions. Yeah. Just carried over all the guilt part.
Where does the Pope stand in all of this?
They're not for the Pope, against any organized religion, any sort of pastor, Pope, middleman. It's like, no, just you and God. And then people really couldn't wrap their heads around it. And it did not work out.
It did not work. How many years would you say you your family was partridging it across the
good
USA?
Good 10 years before they're like, we should give it up. And then they look back on it now are like, yikes, our 20s were crazy. like it was just a phase. Yeah, and I'm like, that's a pretty big step to take. Like most people get like, you know, it's like the worst thing you do is like you get dreadlocks as a white person. But they
I was gonna say bleach your hair, but
right. That's about it. Yeah. But what about you? So what was your background?
Well, I had an aunt who was a faith healer. So like she had a church in her house.
Okay.
So, like, we had to go to church in my
aunt's
house.
So she had no church.
But we were Italian, so there was, like, a good Sunday dinner after. So it wasn't, like, that terrible. Like, you just sit there and then you get meatballs. So it was not the worst, but...
Who did she heal? Like, is there... What was...
To my knowledge, no one.
No one. Okay, great.
To my knowledge, no one.
No, in your family, a lot of gout.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of gout. But all still suffering. It's amazing.
Still suffering, but no one was like, you know, I've been handicapped. And then she was like, throw that chair away. And then they're like, let's get that chair back.
You know, I think that it was more of the hope for healing than it was the actual healing, I guess.
Okay, it wasn't in real time. Like, you watch these televangelists on TV. And
right.
People
she
feels great.
Loved the televangelists.
Yeah.
Like, she would go to the televangelist conventions, like, fly across the country to go watch these guys and honestly put on a hell of a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
And so,
showman.
I guess what I wanted to ask you is, like, when you're going around traveling with your family, proselytizing wherever you can go, and you're watching your parents go out there and try to talk to people, and they weren't, you know, really getting with it, how did you even learn about comedy as a kid? Like, how did you even know it was a thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just seeing it on TV accidentally. We weren't really allowed to watch TV.
Uh-huh.
I think Chris Rock was the first comedian I saw. He was hosting like the MTV Movie Awards, and I was like, that sounds fun. I just wanted to do it as like a hobby.
Really?
Like, yeah, I'll just do it.
How old would you say you were?
When I saw it for the first time, I was probably six or seven when I saw that. And then just grew up watching Conan. Would secretly record that in my room.
You had to hide Conan.
Yeah. We weren't allowed to watch any sort of TV. So what I did is I made my mom sign me up for this homeschool program because we had to be homeschooled. Mm-hmm. Called the Abeka Academy, and they send you like VHS tapes of real classroom. Yeah. And then, you watch those VHS tapes with the same workbooks. But I signed up for that because that meant I could get my own TV and VCR in my little cubby and then secretly record the show at night.
Very sneaky.
But I got in trouble with Abeka because I was recording over the school tapes.
And they probably wanted them back.
And sending them back. And it wasn't Abeka that discovered it. What happens is they would just blindly send those tapes to other homeschool students throughout the country. So some homeschool kid is like sitting through a Christian Science class.
And then watching like Arnold Schwarzenegger pop up with like
the
fake
mouth.
Yeah,
and then that cuts out and then on comes the masturbating bear.
You opened so many eyes.
So many eyes, yeah. So I'd like to,
maybe you did proselytize.
Take a lot of credit for Conan's success in that way.
Yeah. He was big with homeschooled Christian kids.
Homeschooled Christian kids had no choice but to watch him.
Yeah, the network could not figure out why that demo was doing so well.
Why?
Yeah.
So I don't want to get too personal on this with your family, but was there a point with your parents where they just like, we're like, okay, we're just done with this. And they, like, did something happen that they just said,
they
I'm
divorced,
done?
Yeah. There was technically a trial.
A trial?
Yeah. There was another family involved in it. And then, she had murdered her kids because of it. And then that was all over the news. And then they had to stop. Yeah.
So children were murdered because of your parents. I got your Catholicism and my Judaism.
Yeah.
Religion.
Yeah. Roughly, the idea is that you were born with a sin nature, and it gets worse the older you get.
Sure. That's what they have with everything, though. That's pretty much.
Yeah. You get worse with time, right?
Yeah, nobody gets better. Yeah.
Your body. So then, in her head, she was already struggling with mental illness. This other woman, and then thought like, "Oh, I could save my kids if we do it now."
Holy.
But what a fun comedy show this is.
Yeah. Hey, listen. Comedy and tragedy.
Right?
Hand
together.
In hand, right together, marching towards the abyss together.
9 a.m. It is 9 a.m.
So, okay. You got any good jokes about the kids getting killed? No.
So funny.
I don't know where to go for that. Like, I got to be honest with you. I didn't realize that, and I didn't try to lead you to that. I didn't know. So forgive me.
No, but you did. Like, what happened? How did it disband? And that is it. Yeah.
Wow.
That'll do it.
That'll do it, right?
Yeah.
That is bad PR.
Yeah.
If like one kid died at this comedy club, it'd be over.
I hope those kids got to see Conan at least once.
At least once. I'd send him tapes.
You're a good guy for that. This got dark quick.
Right? So how are you going to dig yourself out of this?
Watch me.
You got a green screen behind you of Patrice. Let's get into that.
Sure. What would you like to know about it?
No, that's a legend.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to
keep
on death.
Much respect.
As a topic.
I can switch over by complimenting you.
Okay.
I have to say I watched your Conan set in research for this. That is probably the best late night talk show set I've seen in years.
Thank you for that.
That was excellent.
I couldn't argue with that. We're going to get to Conan. I guess I will continue along the lines of question of coming up and going from this insane background in comedy. Where did you first actually step on a stage? Like
In Los Angeles, which is ill advised. Do not do that.
Okay.
Like, get good in your hometown if you can. But I didn't really have a choice. I was like, there's a lot of things I wanted to do, and legitimately was not good at anything else by the time I was 18. And everyone's asking, like, what are you going to do with your life? I was like, well, I could barely read, so I'll do comedy. And, you know, there's a lot of messed up people in there. And, you know, I had the stage presence of yelling at people already. So it was just
once you're standing in a parking lot telling people they're going to hell as a child, you could pull
that's
off
mainly
any
punchline
you
now.
Want.
That's mainly it. a lot of hellfire preaching. I just knew what I wanted to do pretty early on, but didn't think of it as like a career. I was like, if I have to work at Taco Bell and do this at night, then I'll do that. I'll work breakfast at Taco Bell. The best shift, and then I'll do this.
So,
night.
You just found it and fell in love with it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it was like friends telling me I should do it, and I started an improv actually.
Okay.
It's kind of like, it's a little easier to fail on stage with improv.
Yeah, because you can blame it on other people.
You blame it on the other people. He sucked out there. And it's also like, we just made that up.
Blame the crowd. Terrible prompts.
Right. And it's improv, so like the only people that are watching it is just other improv students.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like pyramid scheme in that way. So
talking about great. Cults.
Right? Exactly. So it was a great way to start. And then maybe after a year and a half of that, started doing stand-up. After I was like a little comfortable on stage.
Maybe improv was the little ingredient that your parents were missing in this whole thing.
Yes.
Not enough yes.
Well, that's a sentence that no one's ever said before. You know, this needs more improv.
Yeah. Well, honestly, it's not on TV. Honestly, wouldn't it made it better?
No.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
Just some whose line is it anyway? Like giant coil props that we bring out?
Just big springs and pool noodles.
Exactly.
And communion.
And communion. Yeah.
So you founded at 18. You step on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
And may I ask how old of a guy you are now? I'm not even positive.
I'm 29.
You're 29?
Yeah.
All before 30. Good right? on you, sir. Yeah. Good on you, sir.
It's been great. I mean, I love the work, so I just keep going.
Sure. Now, you found an interesting way to make a name for yourself. You went after you went to the internet and you started making videos, famously your LAX birthday party.
Oh yeah.
Which is very funny, by the way, I had to say.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it when you were just going down the list, like telling people to come to LAX to come to your birthday.
Oh, yeah. The idea was roughly that everyone has these like crazy demands for their birthday, especially in LA, of like, we're doing an 80s theme party and everyone needs to like dress up. And it's like, we barely like you as a person, let alone I got to go buy stuff. Like, I might stop by this party. So the idea was to throw the most elaborate, difficult birthday party to attend. And that is at the Chili's To Go, located at the LAX terminal. So to attend the party, you would have to buy an airline ticket. You had to bring fake bags because like the TSA would be like, why aren't you traveling with anything? And then, zero people came. But then what the video ended up being is the people that were there, that were already there, they kind of made it a party.
And see, that video itself was so unique and different that it picked up a lot of views, and it kind of went viral.
It definitely did. It was huge for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sold a show based on that, and then, it's informed a lot of the work that I've done since then.
Yeah.
Right after that, I moved into this is when everyone was abusing crowdfunding.
Lived off of installation.
Yes, sir. The idea was to abuse crowdfunding as much as possible because everyone was doing it at the time. So I was like, if I called my mundane day-to-day life performance art, could I get funding for that? And for 2 months, I lived in an art installation that was an apartment. It was like this, and made like some fake art pieces and stuff, and then was fully funded via Kickstarter for 2 months.
It was. And when I checked it this morning, I looked at that page, and you got over $8,000 from people for that?
Yeah, and then a little bit more because, insanely enough, Ronnie Turioff, the professional basketball player, played for the Lakers and then the Timberwolves, found out about it. And then he gave me twice that amount to keep it open and was a part of the project. And he would hang out there.
He would just show up.
One of the most insane relationships that I have to this day. Of, like, you could not be more of a Robin Big situation. so great.
He just likes Moses.
He's one of the nicest people that you'll ever meet, and it's insane that we're friends. Yeah.
Well, I have to say that art installation was very interesting. It was basically, this is what a millennial is like.
Yeah, and it was open for 24 hours a day.
And you lived there.
Yeah, I lived there. And there was no doors and anything, so people could watch me shit, shower, shave, all that stuff. Around the clock. And people would come in the middle of the night. It was truly insane. Like, I lost my mind.
Were you ever, like, worried? Like, people just coming in and out? Were people ever, like, looking shady that kind of freaked you out?
A lot of things I did not. Like, it got away from me very fast where people would just, like, host concerts in there because it was an open space. It was this giant loft downtown.
Where and they didn't call you first? They just showed up?
No, because it was open to anyone. So if people had, there was like even rival art shows set up in there. People would just record their podcasts, like mobily there. People just use it as an artist space because it was an anything goes vibe. It was yeah, it was insane. There was even an open mic in there. Concert.
That's convenient for you.
Dodgeball game.
Now, when you were living there, did you have to stay there for 24 hours? Or were
I never left.
So okay, yeah. So you actually went insane from it.
Absolutely went insane. Like, would look at footage and like, I don't even recognize who I was. You do become very comfortable with the cameras around you.
Yeah.
Filming you and just people around you pretty fast.
So your first day out, what was that like?
Oh, insane. I went to do a show and then I immediately had to leave because I just was like overwhelmed with anxiety after just being out and just being like in the world now.
You're like, you walked into a bathroom stall and closed the door and we're like, I remember this.
Yeah. I was just hanging out with friends and I was just like, I don't know what it is, but I have to leave right now. I just was like hyperventilating almost. Yeah, it was insane. It took a couple months to kind of
I imagine so.
Refresh from that. Very weird thing.
That I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful social experiment. Because it's really just abusing crowdfunding and just saying, hey, folks, this is a little ridiculous. It was poignant. It was making a point, and it was also making a point about a generation. So I give you props on that. Acting.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get into acting? Because, like, you started on improv, you're doing comedy. Where does this branch start growing on the tree?
Well, I write out of just necessity. I'm like, mm-hmm. Someone will give me a job, I'll write. But what I really love is just performing. Acting lets you do that. You know, you don't have to do anything. I just like performing. If it's stand-up or if it's acting on something, if it's drama, I get the same amount of joy out of it.
Interesting.
And lucky enough to live in Los Angeles where that's the industry there. So you can very easily do both.
Well, you know you're doing better than most in the acting world, I have to say.
Thank you.
Well, most people in LA. I mean, realistically speaking, it's very hard to get into a movie. It's very hard to be a good stand-up comedian. It's very hard to get on television. But you, through these unconventional things that you did at the start of your career, really made a name for yourself and allowed you to branch out like that. So, like, when you decided to go after acting, did you want to do more silly stuff? Or you were just like, I want to do serious acting? What was your preference?
I just wanted to perform. Like, I don't want to be famous necessarily, but I do want to perform more. So you kind of have to be somewhat known to make yourself useful to a movie because that's all it is. Like, oh, I know Kevin Hart, so I'll go see that movie. So you kind of need that part. But it was just I just like performing. And if I was living in a small town and my only option was community theater, I'd be doing that.
So
I just happened to be in a lucky place.
When your parents see that you're like in a movie,
mm-hmm.
how do they react to that?
Oh, they love it. There's nothing they can say. Like, you always hear the cliche of people are like, when are you going to get a real job? When your parents were unsuccessful cult leaders, there's not anything they can say. You know, they're not like, when are you going to get a real job? I'm like, when are you going to ever pay taxes?
The 501c3 is still good.
Right. When's child support coming? So, just have always kept up with that. And luckily, they inform each other.
Right.
And I think the biggest comments I got off of my Conan set was just, like, the acting element of it. Not necessarily the writing. Just
all
like
day
performing.
Long. All day long. It was very refreshing. And if you haven't seen it, folks, it's on YouTube. You can check it out pretty easily. But there is one part of it where I watched and I went, okay, I want to know how the producers react to you pitching it. Because I know that it's very controlled.
Yeah.
It's
famously, it's one of the hardest sets to get is Conan because JP, who books the show, is very particular.
You know, it's so funny you bring up JP because I had his cell phone number and I seem to have lost it. Maybe you can get it to me when the
hard
show's
to
over.
Reach. Yeah, he's a purist and is someone that is actively out there in clubs and even small festivals and is really like boots on the ground scouting.
Yeah.
And is a purist and has really a sophisticated taste.
And realistically speaking, you know, when it comes to late night, it's not the juggernaut that it used to be for stand-up comedy. But if you're watching late night for stand-up, I would recommend Conan. Like, I know Colbert's doing some good stuff, but I would recommend Conan for exactly that reason. I think it is a little bit more of a different flavor of comedy and, as you said, more sophisticated.
Yeah, and Conan personally loves stand-ups.
Yeah.
Versus those guys. Like, he just, we just did like an 18-city tour with Conan.
And you're hosting those, aren't you?
No, he's hosting
those. Oh, he's hosting it.
And then he does like 20 minutes up top, and then he brings like me or Rory Scovel or Ron Funches out. Oh, yeah. And Taylor Tomlinson was also on the tour. But then I do host Conan's live show in L.A.
Okay.
He's got like stand-up show, yeah. So I'll host that. And then sometimes he'll co-host it with me. And so by that, I mean he'll make fun of me on stage. It's the best thing in the world.
So as a kid, you know, like taping his stuff and hanging out with him and like being a part of the tour, that's got to be like mind-bending.
Insane. Like the cliche of like in a movie when a guy's talking to like a hot girl and they're fumbling all over the words. Like, I still get that. I've been working for him for a year and a half now. Mm-hmm. But it's still like we'll be on stage together and we're joking and I'll just look over and get starstruck. I'm like, oh, you're like a logo.
Yeah.
You know? Just like when someone looks like a logo to you.
Yeah, he really does. It's is it? The quotient of the size of the head equals like the fame. Isn't that what they say? Like the bigger the head and the more like
big head, the characteristics. He's a very commanding figure. No one looks like him.
Yeah, definitely not.
Right? Right. Besides like Joel Edgerton. But even that,
didn't even
like,
think about that. But you're right; he does a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah,
I just was watching that series where he traveled around the world.
Oh yeah, Conan Without Borders.
Yeah, and man, that guy sticks out in a crowd. Like no matter where he is, that is just no matter what country he
Cuba,
goes to, you're like,
and it's,
holy crap.
Yeah, he's a good 8 feet taller than everyone else.
Okay, so I want to get back to my question about your first appearance there.
Yeah.
There's a bit that you do, obviously, I don't want to ruin it, but you talk about avocado, and this is what blew me away about
it. You could talk about it. I'm not doing that joke anymore, okay.
But you do this bit about how avocado is like kind of a stuck-up fruit, and you do this thing that is so perfect and well-timed and well-delivered, and it's something you would never really see on a television set because they don't let people do it, where you just put your arms up and you turned your back to the audience, walked away talking, and were so comfortable and just like, I'm avocado. And, you know, even if you buy me in the supermarket, you can't eat me until I'm ready.
It's right.
Like, and you do this delivery, but you're walking away from the camera with your back to it. All of the things that people tell you never to do on television.
Which I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know you're not supposed to do that. I was just like, well, I'm performing. So you kind of get lost in, like, this is just fun to perform. This is, like, what that stuck-up character would do. It wouldn't give a shit about the rules of don't ever turn your back to the audience.
Right.
Yeah.
I think if I had known the things that you're not supposed to do that, I would maybe be like, oh, maybe I don't. But I was just lost in the moment of just performing.
So that was not planned?
No. I didn't plan to turn my back.
I was wondering, because I'm watching this and I'm going, usually, like, here's your mark.
And they make you stay on the thing. And
you
they
just
were scrambling.
Like, wandering the set. Doing that, and it was killing, and it was refreshing, and it was great stuff, and it was just, like, if I had to describe it, it was a different level. It was, like, a comfort that you don't usually see on those shows. So, again, a lot of props, but I just had to know, like, what did the producers do after that? Did they comment on it? Did they say...
When it goes well, they're like, yeah, it's like, glad you did that. And then Conan approves it, so then that's fine, too. I know it went well... Because Conan said the meanest thing after. Like, if yours that doesn't go well, you'll most likely get like, hey, that was great. Like, he'll say something really nice. When I went over to sit on the couch, he just turned to me after the set. And it was like, I think that went well. And he goes, yeah, that was great. It's a shame that none of that's going to air. And I was like, yes.
Wow.
That's when I was like, I did it.
So that wasn't a nut kick. It was more of a you
knew
he was
busting
your balls.
And it's like he likes something.
Okay.
It's the greatest compliment is that I guess it's like, yeah, you know that went well. I can rib on you for anything. Okay. Yeah, I don't need to like build you up. But if it's like a little shaky for your last thing, then he'll usually give you like a... That was great. It was really fantastic. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would be confused because, like, I don't know the guy. Did they tell you that in advance? Like, if he messes with you, then you know it went well.
Well, like, I knew him a little bit before. That's maybe why I was comfortable just because he had hired me and Chris Redd, my writing partner, who's now on Saturday Night Live, to host his live pre-show when he did Comic-Con shows.
Okay.
So we would host that. And, he hired us, and he would come up there with us and – improv with us. So luckily, I knew a lot of the people on the staff.
So you were not walking up completely cold, but you were, but you weren't.
No, it was cold as far as, like, I've never been on the show or did a set that long on TV, but warm enough where I knew, like, I don't know, like the security guy, which is nice. It just helps in those moments because it's a big moment to do your first late night set.
So that set propelled you even further, didn't it?
Insane. Like everyone says now, like, late night sets cannot make or break you. No one's really watching. For me, a lot of people saw that, and it was a night and day.
That's because it was an exceptionally unique and really good set, I think.
Thank you
for
that.
Yeah, it took off, yeah.
And he's
turn
not
your
wrong.
Back to right. everyone. Yeah. Yeah. Well. Is the moral of the story. Disrespect whatever iconic show you're on.
Sorry, Marks, I got no time.
Walk all over the place. But yeah, it was a night and day difference where I got
you might
acting
as well just
jobs
rubbed
based
Conan's
on it.
Head when you got back to the desk.
Right?
Hey, Conan,
but it's great. It's been paying my bills ever since. And
that was only a year and a half ago, wasn't it? It was like 2017.
Yeah, it's like the end of 2017.
Yeah. You are a unique writer, man. You're a very good writer.
Thank
your
you
material. And I watched a good chunk of your set last night. They had me working in the Rickles room, so I was sneaking in to come see you. And there is some multimedia parts of your show. And I'm not going to ruin it for you folks, but I'm going to tell you something right now. You want to come to this show, and you are going to die when you see us. There's footage of Moses as a child and his mother that you will be able to see if you come to the live show.
Yeah, the more I've been performing, I've just been mixing in just multimedia elements because the technology has gotten better.
Sure.
At most clubs, it's gotten easier, and I like to edit my own stuff, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of video stuff, too. So yeah. Just stand-up. It's like, why not? It's so boring. You watch just a white guy talk for, like, it was like an hour? Come on.
I'm almost with you there.
In there. Yeah.
I'm almost with you there. I feel like everything about your show is refreshing. It does not feel like a traditional stand-up show. It is, but it isn't, and it's fun.
Thank you.
And, I mean, I can't compliment you any for more than that because you're just too damn good at what you do, kid. I don't know what to tell
you. Thank you. That's very nice to hear because, you know, you always have a doubt. I'm like, am I doing all right? But it is very nice to hear that.
Well, I mean it. So what's next? What are you up to? What do you got coming up?
A couple movies that I can't really say yet, but things that I essentially got placed in just because of the Conan set. It was like legitimately they saw that and they said, hey, just read this just to make sure, but you pretty much got it.
Any parts for A Fat Best Friend?
Yes, absolutely. This is your audition here.
Oh,
and then developing a show with Conan, hopefully, that will maybe see the light of day. You never know with pilots, but we're working on that right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Scripted, reality based?
It is like it's reality based.
Okay.
It's a lot like
so you
Conan
get to
Without
be you.
Borders, but with me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Those are the fun types of vehicles these days. I mean, you don't really hear a lot of people writing for sitcom or trying to write a sitcom for themselves. Some people do, but
yeah. I think the medium has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Do a multi-cam.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I just one thing I wanted to ask you about your acting career. When you were on This Is Us, you were in the Vietnam flashback things. I heard that even though you didn't have a big part, you had to go through all the training.
I die pretty fast in the show. I think within the first episode I'm on. So I had the one like death on the show that no one cries for. I essentially die on the show so the other characters can be like, wow, Vietnam is no joke.
Yeah. You're an object lesson.
Yeah, right. But leading up to that, we had to go to a week of a military boot camp where Navy SEALs took us out to this ranch and we did weapons training. For at 6 a.m. all day, we would, we went to a real military boot
camp.
Did
they yell at you and shit and everything?
Yes. And it has been a while. You forget how long it's been since, like, an adult has yelled at you outside of, like, traffic.
Right.
I'm just like, out of my way.
Yeah.
But, like, a grown man looking in your eyes.
Yeah.
Yelling at you when you feel like your throat, like,
crying.
Like,
see, I was in the Air Force, which is barely military. And the hardest part I had with basic was having a grown man yell at me and not laughing. I just wanted to laugh. And I was doing that for a job. I can't imagine you doing it just for a 1 week thing. I would have laughed every time they yelled at me. I just would have burst out laughing.
Yeah, it was that. And then I was also like, oh, I'm going to have to run more if I laugh again.
Yeah.
And then Milo, who plays Jack on the show, was also in the boot camp with us. And he takes the show very seriously. He's in character the entire boot camp.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And he yelled at me, and I'm like, oh, my God. It's been also been a while since a handsome person has yelled at you. A rich actor yelling at you from across the set. It's insane.
That's got to be a weird feeling. So when that happens, are you like, I guess they're going to fire me? Or is it just...
No, I knew from the boot camp that he had was like taking it very seriously, and it obviously is paying off. I mean, they're getting... Sure. Nominations left and right. People love the show. It's a good show.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's like, it's his show over there. So I was just like, okay, whatever you need to make a good show. Yeah.
God, acting's so stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of all day. Like, isn't comedy, like, I mean, let's be real. If you had to pick one.
Yeah.
Comedy?
It depends on, yeah, I couldn't pick one.
Okay.
Fair enough. Just because you never know. They're so varied. Like, yeah, there's stuff that is stressful, but there's also stuff that's just very fun acting jobs that are very easy.
Yeah.
Like, sure. I'm Dying Up Here was very fun. You get to wear, like, a stupid wig.
Right.
Do stand-up. It's all stand-ups on the show that are acting. So that was an easy show to be on. And then there's, like, rough weekends at clubs where you're like, what?
Sure.
Yeah. Why am I at Joker's in Richland, Washington, the one Republican... part of
Washington.
It's a casino / and I'll never be booked there again, and that is fine. they're listening to this.
Who books it?
I'll get you a 5-minute set.
They'll love my Trump stuff.
But yeah, so it's like I would get burnt out if I did just one of them, because acting is such a grind that you have no control over, and you're not saying words that are yours, so you go crazy there. And then this, it gets just, what am I doing? I'm out in a new town every night. You would burn out.
Well, you seem the kind of guy who likes to have a lot of different things happening at once.
Yeah.
And
I'm running from my past. So.
that family bus will catch you one of these days.
So it's just like, just immerse myself in a bunch of work and I don't have to deal with anything in the past. It's great.
That's never gone wrong for anyone. So
never.
I think that's a good strategy.
I can't think of any scenario where it's gone wrong.
No.
Either can I.
Yeah.
When you write jokes, like, do you generally write your punchlines first? Does something funny pop in your head and then you write around it? Are you, like, the kind of person who sees something that you want to write about and you sit down and write about it?
Yeah, it's, like, something that will personally annoy me or something I think is interesting, just a topic. Severely dyslexic, so I can't sit down and write.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different compartment in my brain, so everything has to be talked out.
Would you like me to call my aunt, see if she could heal you?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay.
Yes, is your aunt Tom Cruise, who says dyslexia is fake? So I have to, like, walk around my apartment like a psycho, talking things out,
okay,
or painfully talk it out on stage. So it's very little, like, pen to paper, down to the word.
Really? So you keep a lot of things in your head?
Yeah. And it's a lot of it is like what I'm drawn to is like, is that a fun thing to perform? That's a big part of it too. Like, is that fun? That's just like a fun voice I want to do. Can I write around that? Just like performing. That's it.
Interesting. Okay. Performer first and foremost.
Yeah.
So you know, rose to prominence. I would say you're definitely doing very, very well. Would you give any advice to anybody who's just starting in comedy now? Is there anything you would say to them to concentrate on? Or
yes. One, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Perfect.
So everything comes from just like a personal experience of like, maybe this is what I would have done, but I'm still figuring it all out. I have so much to learn and feel very lucky and almost imposter syndrome that I'm in the position that I'm in. But I guess it would just be whatever it is that you want to do, if it's stand-up or podcasting, just try to do that as much as possible. So that's, of course, harder to do than just you could say that. But it means, like, whatever small scale that is, do it on that level that you can. If you're able to go to an open mic, just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Try to do that more than you do anything else. And if those hours... you can eclipse everything else in your life, where it's like, let's say stand-up. If you can spend more hours on stage or writing, than anything else, then you'll be fine.
Interesting.
And then be kind to people. Because that's half of it, too.
If you a big part of it.
Yeah, know that one, Benny.
Yeah.
Take that in. Be kind to people.
Yeah, man. This is... Now that's a pointed, that was a pointed piece of advice. Not kind.
Right.
Not kind.
Did I get you on the cheek?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. See, I can be kind. I'm sorry.
Look
I'm
at
so
that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm gonna spank him later. So yeah, he's just
there
doing
you go.
It
one of these days.
Yeah.
He's gonna get a hold of that dagger, and I'm in trouble. Yeah. I am in trouble. Moses, thank you so much.
Thank
for
you
coming
for having me. I appreciate
Seriously,
it. You guys are
though.
Very nice people, and you made me feel great and very comfortable.
Well, good. I'm glad. And you could see Moses 4 more shows this weekend. CarlsonComedy.com for your tickets, or you call 585-4-COMEDY. Moses, safe travels, my friend.
Thank you.
Safe travels, and I'll see you tonight for the shows. I'm going to come watch. We're going to be right back with the news with Ross Johnson. Stay tuned. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Hey, everybody. We are back, and it is time for one of my favorite segments of the week, the one before we go home. It's Ross Johnson with stand-up news, everybody.
Yahoo!
Hi, Ross.
Hi, everybody.
How are you?
Good. Nobody died this week, so I'm pretty excited about this week's news
well,
lineup.
Well, some people died,
but nobody worth.
Nobody that was funny.
Nobody died in an amusing fashion.
Maybe nobody froze to death or anything. Too soon, Benny.
Oh God, Brian.
Do you have to ruin every segment? Every Damn segment it. Do you have to come out of the gate just shooting torpedoes at us to ruin everything?
Yep.
God.
It's my job as oldest man in the room.
You imagine, like,
just to remind you of your mortality.
Has he ever done improv or anything? You know, you do the yes and thing, and he's just like, okay, but somebody died, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's not.
The improv is like, it's cold out here. Hey, did you guys hear about that kid in Iowa who died outside behind the school because of the cold?
No, who invited Brian?
You know what? The only thing I can think of that would be worse than improv with Brian is Thanksgiving with him, but that's just me. Yeah. Ross, what do you got for us this week?
Okay, so nobody died. I'm going to start out on a little bit of a down note, though. Artie Lang is back in jail,
I did not hear that.
Sad about.
There's a lot of interesting things going on with Artie right now.
There's a lot of interesting things going on with Artie, and I have sort of a bullet list of things going on with Artie Lang, but I'll try to keep it relatively short. So he's back in jail. He was he had pled guilty for heroin possession back in 2017, and apparently this week he tested positive for cocaine and morphine.
Mm.
And sorry, there's some hand waving going on in front of me.
Keep talking, Ross.
So,
I mean, are you completely?
I was looking
dense?
At Ross. I was mesmerized by
everybody.
Ross.
There was a whole behind the scenes thing going on here. So in the outtake reel, you'll understand exactly what was going on.
Outtake.
So he apparently tested positive for cocaine and morphine. So he was back in court this week, in Essex County, New Jersey. He was taken into custody. He's being reevaluated. He says someone on his Twitter account says he's going into rehab. He's going to start taking care of himself starting now, apparently.
Well, listen, I want him to.
Yeah, right. Oh, absolutely.
Same old song, different dance this time. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's it. And you sort of, I'm still rooting for the guy, but you sort of.
He's got a punch card at that rehab by now.
Well, keep going, Ross. I'm sorry.
Okay, but the other thing, so before this, because we had.
Speculated on the nose.
We had talked about the nose. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, now this is a story I want to talk about.
Yeah. So we talked about the nose. Before he was taken into custody, he was on. He was on a podcast with Jessica Pilot and Adam Kaplan called "Are We Still Talking About This?" Where he explains what happened with his nose. He got kidnapped, which, to my knowledge, he's not talked about before.
No,
he has not heard that before.
Yeah, so apparently he had a $62,000 gambling debt.
He had been kidnapped. So the preface here was, I guess, a lot of cocaine use from the 80s onward. So he has
no damage to your nose, support
interior structure concept. Got punched in the course of this $62,000 gambling debt kidnapping.
And his nose has not been right since.
Wow.
So the story goes with this kidnapping. I read the article. I didn't get to listen to the podcast, but he had $62,000 worth of debt to a bookie who is someone he's known since he was a kid. Like, they're friends. Mm-hmm. And you go 62 large into a friend.
I feel like Brian would know that.
Listen, yeah. I imagine Artie Lang's been deeper in and paid out of it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
like, sure. Artie's like a frequent flyer, I imagine, for this guy and their buddies. So somehow some guy who worked for him got sent to go get this money, and the guy roughed up Artie, threw him in the back of a van, punched him in the nose, flashed a gun. It was a whole big thing.
Jesus.
And he came to in the back of this van. And he's like, "Kid, I know the guy. I've been friends with him forever. This is going to be a problem for you if you don't let me go." And I guess it spooked the kid, and he ended up just letting him out and like leaving the scene of the crime. But he doesn't know how long he was kidnapped for. It's a really crazy story. But wow. Apparently, Artie talked to the bookie after, and Artie's version of this was, he goes, "Oh my God, the kid roughed you up? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do with them?" And he's like, "Nothing. Just, you know, tell him don't do it again." You know, just art in an arty way. Yeah. What a crazy story.
Man.
That is only an Artie Lang story.
That is only an Artie Lang story. Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't think I'd have taken it that well.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'd have
been. My nose was messed up anyway.
I feel like if you're Artie Lang, you kind of roll with the punches at this point, probably. Right?
He has to. Yeah. Like, literally. Waka waka.
So,
what else we got today?
Is that the mugshot from his last arrest?
Yeah,
that's the most recent one. And wow. sorry everybody if that's a little low res. That was sort of the best quality. I guess they don't do like super high def mugshots, so
you would think that'd be necessary. But yeah. Moving on, what else we got today?
I mean, I think you can figure out who it is. Okay, so
it's a hell of a silhouette these days.
Okay, so another comedian who's had some issues, but things are going better. So Pete Davidson, we've talked about a couple times. He is going to be...
Yeah, he looks real healthy in that picture.
That's just how he looks, though. Yeah. Like, that's the same face that got Ariana Grande. I mean, that's...
Jesus.
I don't think... It doesn't get any better. It doesn't get any worse.
Cam is so upset.
Cam's just muttering in the back.
I want to see those tattoos. What are these tattoos? 1468. Okay.
Is that a cloud with a Roman numeral in it?
He's got a Star of David.
Or Spain. Or it's Spain. Either a cloud or Spain.
It looks like he just has like a phrase on his arm. It looks like one of those wooden signs a mom has in her kitchen.
He has live, laugh, love across his chest.
Bless this mess.
Bless this mess.
I was trying to come up with something, but Cam wins again, so there's no...
All right, so okay, what's going on with Pete Davidson?
So he had some, you know, we've talked a couple times about some of the mental health issues he's had, but he's... seems to be doing better, and he's going to be now the I guess don't feel bad for him, because he's going to be the star and also the subject of Judd Apatow's next movie, which does not have a name, but it's going to begin production in spring or summer of this year. And I guess it's going to be a comedy drama about Pete Davidson's life, starring Pete Davidson.
I swear to God, I hope it's called How to Lose Ariana Grande.
Yeah. Again, I think Cam has the best fun stories. Again, I think Cam has the best idea for the title.
What
Bless this mess.
Bless
this. Be
well done.
Did you hear what Ariana Grande did just very, very quickly?
His
ex-girlfriend.
No. Yes.
She got a tattoo in the palm of her hand that was supposed to be the name of her
new song, Seven Rings,
and the Asian characters. I can't remember which, if it was Japanese or Korean or whatever. But it says...
She didn't care either.
It says barbecue.
It basically means a small barbecue grill.
Yeah.
But in an update, she tried to get it fixed, and now it means barbecue chicken finger. I swear to God.
Barbecue. No, that's funny, because I saw jokes about her tattoo, but I didn't,
Yep.
That's like the age I'm at, where like I see the jokes. I'm not so old that I don't see the jokes, but then I don't, you know.
Right. Yeah. But you just play
I have to look up who
it.
Ariana Grande is.
Ah. Okay.
It's, you know.
So he's making a biopic about Pete Davidson,
starring Pete Davidson.
Well, who else are you gonna get to play him?
I think Pete Davidson's doing fine.
I know just the guy.
I hope it's
Christian Bale. Can we get Christian Bale to play Pete Davidson? Like he could lose the weight. Like he gained the weight for Cheney.
He
loses
all that Cheney weight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. What else you got?
So, Stand Up NBC. So this is a prize award that NBC gives out every year. This is the so the 15th year. They announced the winner.
Please be me. Please be me.
Brian Ball again.
Yay!
For the 12th straight year. Now it was Mike E. Winfield. So Mike's got a Netflix special.
Malcolm looks good.
He's say, is that Malcolm's brother?
So he's got a special on coming out on what?
He's got a Netflix comedy special. Well, he performed on a Netflix comedy special, the Brad Paisley's Comedy Rodeo. So he wasn't the star, but he's got a feature coming out called Pimp. But this award is for like a.
Did you say Brad Paisley's Comedy Rodeo?
Swear to God. Swear to God.
I missed that one, unfortunately.
Comedy Rodeo.
This is not
rodeo.
An award for a star. This is an award for, like,
listen,
an up-and-comer.
Nobody has any problems with Mr. Winfield. We're just discussing
Were
the
you
fact
on
that...
Brad Paisley's Comedy Rodeo?
No, I wasn't, hey, Ross. You. And you thank damn you. Well know I wasn't.
Thank you.
Ross, I had a booking, okay?
Damn it.
I had a one-nighter with Danny Liberto.
In Mexico, New York.
So he gets a talent holding deal with NBC Universal, whatever that means, and a headlining spot at the annual.
It means at least $200,000.
Annual convention, yeah, where he gets to perform for talent bookers from across the country. He's going to also headline a regional semifinalist showcases for the 2019 stand-up NBC competition. So he gets to host next year's, and he gets to meet some talent.
Awesome!
Agents.
I can't believe I missed the rodeo. I can't believe I missed the rodeo.
Pick up your phone once in a while.
All right.
And come catch him at the Rochester Riff Night.
No,
come
Cam,
catch Brian McBride at the... Brian Ball, Brian McBride. You're going to be there too, though, right?
I was making another Malcolm joke.
So either way, come to it because Malcolm and I will be there. Right. What else you got, Ross? Let's close this out today.
Wrapping up because the Ghostbusters conversation was so... I wanted to follow up with Vinny especially. So the latest word on Ghostbusters, and some of this is... A little. They haven't announced anything officially.
Latest word: Harold Ramis still dead.
Still dead. That's the news. No. So the guy from the Hollywood Reporter. This comes from sourcing from the Hollywood Reporter. But again, the studio hasn't announced anything. So I wanted to follow up with Vinny. I want to give you the update on the movie and then find out if you're still on team anti Leslie Jones.
I'm not. What are you talking about? I'm not anti-Leslie Jones,
but
I
still
just said,
disagreeing
listen, if the
with
movie
Leslie
didn't
Jones.
Do that great and people wanted, this is what people originally wanted. I just, before you go, my point was people wanted the original Ghostbusters. They couldn't deliver it, so they rebooted it. The reboot didn't go as well as they thought it would. And then there was a chance they were going to be able to get what people originally wanted. And I'm saying there's nothing wrong with that because it's capitalism.
Well, my question, okay, so, but you were making a lot of assumptions about what the new movie was going to be. So I'm going to tell you a little more about what the rumor is that the new movie will be. I just want to know if you're still feeling like this was
what the way could
to go.
Possibly change my mind, Ross.
So the main characters of the upcoming Ghostbusters 3 are going to be a quartet of teenagers, two boys and two girls.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ!
Apparently, 12-year-old actress Sarah Abbott, who has appeared in episodes of Black Mirror, will auditioned and is rumored to be at the top of the line. So at least one 12-year-old girl. None of the original Ghostbusters have been signed at present, although, again, there's some suggestion that they might be able to do that and do sort of a passing of the torch to their teenage counterparts. So,
no thanks.
I'm just wondering.
Hard pass.
I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering at what point you're going to admit that I'm right.
Wow, Ross.
How many weeks?
On a crusade this morning.
How many weeks?
Wow, about a quarter to never.
Fire the shot.
Because, listen, we don't know if they got Ernie Hudson yet.
Sure.
We know Dan Aykroyd sure as hell isn't doing nothing.
Yeah. No.
Because his sequel to Nothing But Trouble just is never going to happen.
Which I'm still kickstarting.
Everything But Trouble.
Everything But Trouble.
Yeah.
All of the trouble.
And Bill Murray, you know, every now and again, he'll show up for a paycheck.
Yeah, he'd pop
and
up.
Random sporadic places.
Sure.
And crash your wedding.
So, no, I admit nothing.
Okay.
I admit nothing.
All right.
I refuse to concede anything new.
I already got us tickets.
I will say, sounds like shit to me, but it's better than you being right.
They probably pitched it as, imagine Ghostbusters meets Napoleon Dynamite.
Or Stranger Things.
Get the Napoleon Dynamite kid in there. That'd be good.
Yeah.
That kid, he's like older than me, but you know, whatever. We'll get him.
He's not
Get Pedro, get the twins to play Pedro.
They're no busier than Dan Aykroyd.
The twins play Pedro?
No, that was one person.
It was twins.
I don't
believe you.
I don't think that's true. The answer to
this. He's an identical twin.
Efren Ramirez was his name, actually.
Identical twin.
No.
Okay, maybe I'm crazy. I'd like the Pedro twins. I would like the Pedro
twins
to do a thing like the two little girls of The Shining in a hotel. Like, they come in there, the Ghostbusters are like, oh my God, what's happening? We're going to bake you a cake.
And he's like, okay, but I don't have a brother.
It was hot, so I shaved out of my head.
Does too.
He may be a twin. I buy that, but they were both in the movie.
Okay, so listen. I'm Googling this right now.
Okay.
What's his name, Cam? Efren?
Efren Ramirez.
Efren with an N?
Yeah, I believe it's with an N, but it could be with an M.
Like Zac Efron?
Yeah, I don't.
Can you just Google Zac Efron instead?
No.
Damn it.
I wish I'd have never said Napoleon Dynamite.
I
believe he has a twin. I don't think they were both in the movie.
Okay, maybe I was wrong.
They were not both in the movie.
Okay, I thought it was twins, but here they are. There's a picture of them on my computer.
Yeah, lots of people have siblings.
There they are.
Do you just assume that if they're twins, they have to do everything together?
That's them. Yes, I want them for Ghostbusters too. It's no crazier than this 12-year-old.
I get Tina the Llama.
I want Uncle Rico. I want Ernie Hudson and Uncle Rico.
LaFonda.
That's what I want.
All right.
That's the end of our show. We'll see you next week. Make sure you leave a review, preferably not about the news part of the show, the good part with Moses. But we'll see you at the Comedy at the Carlson this week. Later, Marks.